This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's great, Nate, here on the Fan. Tobes is in for GP. We are at Tap Sports Bar tomorrow and Friday. Come see us. It's the best. The best. Feet is up. Watching the tourney. Sorry about it. Fried food right in here. I'm pointing right at my fat face. It's going in my mouth, right down in my tummy. And then you know what I'm going to do? Bob Sentley style on a 50-50 play. Full send. Let's go.
Love it.
Sending that runner.
Love it. Keep going.
Guy's got a cannon in center field. It's a line drive one hopper right at him. My guy hasn't even touched third base yet. Bob Sentley. More appies, more appies, more appies. Let's go. Stumbled into this Local 53 discussion here, Tobes, based off of what Sam Fortier, a really nice piece in the Washington Post, and there's no real defined thing, usually behind the curtain here, is you try to have like an either or kind of a refined topic, something hard-hitting.
Or
like,
question.
Are you in or are you out? Are you, is it good or bad? Or
yeah.
Which side are you on, this or that? You don't really have that here. But we're just sort of thinking about the approach and kind of brainstorming about where Javon Kinlaw might fit and how the usage might happen. Just kind of ask for people's reactions. And the phones are full. I say we talk to the people. Let's touch them HR appropriate. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Let's go to Bob in Tennessee. Bob, thanks for being patient, buddy. You're on the Fan. Your thoughts on our discussion.
How are you all doing?
Good, pal.
Hey, I love this discussion. I had a couple points to make about it seems to be a Peter's strategy to get the biggest, the baddest,
yes,
the fastest, and the most character. And we'll figure out where to put them, like you said, and then we will coach them up to make, you know, okay players into very good players, and perhaps good players into great players. You know, that's a page taken out of the Tom Landry playbook from the 70s, where they would do that all the time. They would get these superior athletes that nobody ever heard of from Central Michigan, And well, voila, you coach them up, and they're like, dang, they're pretty good. Well, no, they weren't really good when they came in, but they were good when they left. And I think that's what Peters is doing now, but it's so dependent, I think, on the quality of the coaching staff. If the coaching staff isn't good, you've just got big, strong people who can't do anything.
Yeah, you got raw Play-Doh, right, without any kind of design. Bob, it's a good phone call. Appreciate you making it. I think that's an astute point. And the thing I was talking about all the time, I was influenced heavily by this. A guy named Nick Sorensen, who played at Marshall High School and then at Virginia Tech and is now a coach in the NFL, I believe. We played Legion baseball together for a summer. And he was going to go play college football, so his priority was doing football stuff, less so than me and some of the baseball guys. And I saw him years later, and one of the things he told me was, everybody's talented. When you get to the NFL, everybody is so good, right? It is finding the dude and the scheme and the coaching and the thing that puts the talented guy in the place where he can be talented. Like, if you have the fanciest car in the world, if you got the, I don't know my cars, but if you got the best Lamborghini in the world, but you live on a cul-de-sac and the speed limit's 25 miles an hour and there are speed bumps, so what? You know, but you live on the Autobahn and you can be the Lamborghini, you can do that and go 140, then that's the right place for it.
Well, what's interesting about this is stuff we have discussions about all the time in the draft. We talk about this all the time. What doesn't matter what sport it is, football, basketball, baseball, give me the bigger, stronger, faster guy. This is something that happens in the NBA draft all the time, Danny, where you go, give me the 6'11 wing with a 7'4 wingspan that can shoot it a little bit. Give me Alex Saar, right, over some 6'2 guard who may or may not turn into something because that guy has traits not everyone else has, right? And that's what happens here. This is just in free agency. They're doing it where they're getting dudes that are just big, long arms, all sorts of stuff, and seeing maybe they can find something. It's just a little interesting.
Elijah, DC line two. Let's chat about it, my friend. We're talking this roster build in this offseason.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, man.
What's up, man?
What's going on, man? I actually love the decisions because it's letting us know how many times it just felt like we were so out of touch at the end of the season. we didn't know what we needed. I think of this old movie, Pearl Harbor, when they was going to go have their response, and it's like, man, we've got broomsticks for tail guns. And I felt like at times we were just undermanned, and we were trying to put – we just didn't have what we needed. And we have to understand – we had to get guys to practice against bigger. Well, you have to understand, my brother retired from the UFC. We used to train all of the time. And when you're tired, man, and you're going against a bigger guy or maybe a guy who has certain size on their team, when you're running through camp, that's when this size matters. You got to get heavier getting off of the bus. You know, so if Coach Quinn, excuse me, in DQ, in a defensive coordinator, is like, we're going to roll with a deep crew, how many times at certain parts of the game you felt like we needed more size so we could even be more flexible? We had guys that were seemingly undersized at certain points. So this is what you need. You have to show the guys that you already have on the team that we are willing to support you. Everyone's like, well, this is the best that we can get with this squad. There's nothing else that they can do to get these guys who are already on the team to perform better. What they're showing is something different. They say, we believe and we see in our building that our guys can maybe do more. Maybe Frankie Louvu doesn't have to wrap all the way around from the blind side to run all the way to the play side to wrap around and make a tackle. Maybe someone could set the edge and help him out. Maybe so. That's what these things are designed to do. When you show up to certain games, you're going to know Philly, you're going to have some weight on both sides of the ball.
Elijah, I love that. Now, what was that phrase he used, Toby? Seat? Set the what? What was it? What he said?
Set the edge.
Now, what is that?
It's something that defensive ends, edge rushers should do so that runners don't go outside and go for long yardage, long gains.
Oh, so you're trying to prevent Barkley going to the house every time they run a pitch
play
that
way. You don't want him to go all the way out there, correct?
You don't want him to, because you'd rather stop him for a shorter
generally.
Gain.
You know. So generally, consensus, common knowledge, you would like that.
I'd like to do that. Shane in Fairfax, what's up, bud?
Hey, first of all, congratulations, Commander and Grant on the new people to the family. So congratulations
there. Oh, thank you,
bud.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks.
Absolutely, man. And that's what we do it for, right? And number two, hey, look, this draft, you got to go through the draft, too. And look, the Eagles have got to figure it out. Obviously, 6'6", 330. 6'5", 330, one of the biggest offensive lines, and what do? They push people around. And that's what you got to do. You got to push people around. But the draft, I think, is where you're going to steal your talent, especially this year's draft. Is going to be deep in edge rushers, very deep. And you know what? What's to say you don't go out there and get a good-sized corner, too? You know what? Everybody's talking, we need – because right now, Lattimore ain't showing me nothing in the corner right now after the year he had. Hopefully he can rebound from there. But you know what? That's how you win. It's old school, I hate to say it, but the trenches dominated, and look what the Eagles did.
No, there's a place for it, Shane. Always appreciate you, dude, and thanks for the kind words as well. There's always a push and pull. Like, if you want to run the Shanahan-Kubiak school of some of those stretch zone plays and some of those things that can be wildly effective in terms of running the football, you don't necessarily want the 330-pound plotter. If you want to play power game, you do. There's a push and pull there in terms of what works best in your opponents. But the way it's lining up, Philadelphia's chosen a direction. And if you're following that to try to counter it, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I think they want to play physically and then allow their skill guys to be the finesse, right? Like, you think about how Baltimore has built their stuff. They're a physical football team with the most finesse quarterback in the league in Lamar Jackson, right? They've got Derrick Henry. They've got a good O-line. They've got all these guys, and then they allow their playmakers to be the guys that'll do everything else, but they want to beat you physically as well. I think the Commanders want to build something like that.
Reese, St. Mary's, appreciate you making the call by talking to us.
What's up, fellas?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I think people keep talking about Philly, but they ain't thinking about Redskins when we was the Hogs.
Yeah.
That's who we should be taking after. We taking after being bigger in the front and being bigger. Oh, we want the Hogs back. And that's me being big and physical. It ain't got nothing to do with Philly. Philly got lucky. We was doing this for a while. It's just that we got to get back to it. Because once you big and physical, you can now, Jaden Daniels can do anything he wants. Just think about a play action fake. And now they can't come, and then they got to go against a big guy. Now you can't get in. So Jaden Daniels is going to eat up with this line and doing that thing. But we the Hawks, we ain't worried about what Philly did. We been did that.
Reese, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Phone was it was on a CB, I think, right there, where it's like over. But it's a good call. And to me, obviously, if you mention offensive line play, it's catnip here in Washington, D.C. I lived it too, man. I mean, the Hogs are unbelievable. That was when nobody else was, right? Nobody else was 300 pounds, and they had a whole line of 300-pounders. That was, like, unique. Now it's like you go down the street to Matha, there's kids on the bench that are 300 pounds.
Yeah.
You know? But I see his point. I think you have to have an eye line towards Philadelphia, but I understand why you're saying, no. You know, do your own thing. Go back to what we were. The game has changed so much. I mean, you think of the running game and passing as an extension of that to try to open up defenses and some of the different looks. But at the same time, as complicated as schemes and designs have gotten, there's still the simple, I've got to beat you. I've got to push you to where I want you to go to create space for my guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think as much as you want to recreate what was with the Hogs, that's definitely true, but the team that kind of has that the best right now is Philly. You're looking at them just saying, how can we counteract that? Maybe we can't get the dude like Jalen Carter. You know, maybe we can't get the dude like, you know, whatever, like Jordan Mailata, right? But we can get a guy that size-wise makes it a little more difficult for him to do his job. And so, you know, when we're stepping in there and we got to back up in or we got to rotate through, it's not going to be as easy to move our guys around. Like, you know, you go from, say they go with a big edge, right, where they've got Javon Kinlaw over there.
Yep.
The difference for Mailata of moving Dante Fowler and moving Javon Kinlaw for setting the edge, it's night and day.
Well, I want to be able to give different looks too, and I like that.
Absolutely.
Right? Instead of, you know, listen, if you've got Aaron Donald, you just play Aaron Donald. I don't care about changing your looks with Aaron Donald, right? But if you don't have a star, which, you know, Hendrickson or somebody notwithstanding, then you go, okay, one play you got to block 320-pound guy that's got long arms and a punch. The next play you're trying to block a speed demon going around the edge. The next play after that we're running a TE game. And the next play after that I don't want you to know where we're coming from. That's the way to make okay into good. I think I can't remember which call it was, but a couple ago was saying that to me to maximize it, I can't just go, all right, I got Dante Fowler and then I got another guy that's, you know, also 240 pounds coming off the edge. When you guys want, you can run that way. I can overcommit to stop it, but you know, you're going to be able to run. Okay, now you got to pick your poison. Now, to me, the flip side of that is, if I see Javon Kinlaw in the game until he proves me otherwise, now he might shut me right up, and that's great. I'll go, well, I'm going to make him move. I'll throw that little bubble screen out to the side. Whereas Dante Fowler's out there disrupting it because he's fast, he can motor. That's not who Kinlaw is. So I'll run some action away from him. I'll throw it, drop back, and pass. If he's your defensive end, I got an advantage throwing the football on first down. Is that something you're willing to deal with? But again, it's always a push and pull. It's not a solution as much as it is a trade-off.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting. Back to the point I was making a little bit earlier, when you think about this compared to the draft, when you're drafting a guy, you say, okay, I think I can develop him in this way, Danny. Like, I see the traits that he could become this. Doing this through free agency is interesting because, to your point, when you look at Kinlaw, you're like, well, has he been a great pass rusher? He's shown flashes. He hasn't been consistently great. Has he been good against the run? No. Do you think that you can develop him, or did you find something that you feel like people missed out on? And that's the case where it's interesting to go through this sort of move now in free agency is maybe they're identifying, hey, this guy in this specific scheme, in this specific set of circumstances, in this role is going to be good. I'm going to trust Adam Peters that he's figured it out, but it is intriguing to see if they're going to be able to do that sort of thing with these guys they picked out.
So 800-636-1067, just having kind of a roster discussion based on Sam Fortier's article about them basically going with size. There are exceptions. Jonathan Jones is not a big cornerback. He's 5'9", 185, maybe half boundary, half slot corner, totally fine. I like that versatility, that position flex. Shout out Ron Rivera, wherever you're at. It's not as if Will Harris is Kyle Hamilton at safety, but he's a thumper downhill, kind of replacing Jeremy Chinn. But in the trenches where they majored, it's size. And Deebo Samuel, by the way, is a bit of a freight train. Is kind of a, call him a running receiver or a wide back. I don't know
what
you're doing.
Whatever.
Yeah, but he's not 6'5", but he's there to, if I'm Jonathan Jones, for example, I don't want to see him with a head of steam in practice. I'm going to get truck sticked. I feel like people are annoyed that we're focusing on Kinlaw, and I want to respond to that. I'll do that next. Plus, we're going to talk some Nats with you guys. Remember, Wizards tickets at 6. Plus, we'll have our interview with Trevor Williams. We'll air that in the 6 o'clock hour. But I got some Nats to talk with you guys about, and I want to address your addressing me about Kinlaw. We'll do that next on The Fan. It's too funky not to let it go for a second. It's my contention. This has come up before. You know where I'm going, Darius, right? You know exactly where I'm going? I think this is the funkiest song of all time. I have caught some Eric Flack for this. I challenge you. Give it a little volume in a second. I challenge you not to bob your head. Go ahead. I challenge you. That's the funkiest song of all time. I see you, Stevie. Welcome back. Gene Deal, the Fan. Tobes in for GP. That's how we do. I got a Nationals discussion I want to have with you guys. Hopefully, it's a little bit of fun. Speaking of Nats, Trevor Williams, our chat with him down in Florida. We will bring that to you in the 6 o'clock hour. Get you set for some tournament action tonight. Plenty more to do here on the radio program. I want to tie this up here at the end. So I've seen a few folks chirping me, whether it's via Twitter or feedback here at the station. Different chats, whatever. And it's totally fine. It's what we welcome. It's what we want. It's the whole point is to reach out and be able to touch the folks here, Tobes. But it's the why are you so focused on Kinlaw? There's a reason, in general, when you sign Josh Norman, when you give a huge contract to William Jackson, oh, I'm picking on cornerback spots, or when you go out in free agency and spend on Auburn Haynesworth, nobody cares about the rotational defensive tackle. Like, if Dietrich Wise doesn't work out, you didn't change the future of your program because of that. I'm not saying Kinlaw's making that kind of money, but this is one of those, he's getting a huge pay raise without producing. This is one of those panned signings of the free agency period that's to me one of those tipping point things. If it goes great, like we talked about this last year with Coleman in the draft, right? Obviously, if the whole thing's about Jaden Daniels, okay? If he's great and everybody, we don't care if Luke McCaffrey works out or not. We don't really care if Johnny Newton turns into a star. By God, we got the quarterback and nothing else matters. But you go from having the most important draft with Daniels to, dude, they got a star lineman, or a stud at least, maybe a potential, we thought at the time, a left tackle, in the third round, a guy that played a lot of guard in college. That's your tipping point. To me, that's what Kinlaw is for this free agency class. They're paying a lot. They're paying a premium. They're paying like he was in demand for a guy that hasn't produced. If they're right and he's awesome, whoa. But if not, that's an easy one to point to.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a questionable move. That's why you stick on it. Like, Dietrich Wise, he's not getting enough money for me to feel like
If Eddie Goldman stinks, who cares?
Yeah, like if these other dudes that they... So, like, they make a Tunsil move, right? That one can be criticized if he's bad. They make a Debo move. If you want to say that can be criticized for a fifth-round pick at the end, fine. But those ones you feel like are good value. Mm-hmm. This one does not feel like the value matches the player that you're going with. So that inherently means that there's going to be some criticism for it. We would love for this guy right. to be awesome. I said this last year. Some of the draft picks, some of the stuff they made moves for, I didn't like it. I was wrong, and I'm happy I was wrong. I didn't think Zach Ertz would be as good as he was last year. So, look, they proved me wrong last year with some of the moves that they made. Maybe it's going to be again with Kinlaw, but this is a large deal for a guy that, frankly, has not been very productive. When you think of Javon Kinlaw, you hear the word bust, you hear disappointment. That's not someone that I immediately say, I'll pay you $15 million. Like, that's the difficult part about this.
So here's from Sam's story. This is his piece in the Washington Post. Big disruptive lineman, talking about Kinlaw, who has a good motor, and though his attacking style can lead to misses against the run and on tackles, the Commanders are betting that they can maximize his size and pass rush strengths. Kinlaw's three-year deal worth up to $45 million was one of the most widely panned moves of free agency. One critic, salary cap analyst Jason Fitzgerald, graded the signing an F. A rival NFL personnel executive who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss another team's signing called it, quote, a pretty big bet. The deal could be better. Excuse me, the deal could make better sense if the Commanders use Kinlaw more as a pass rusher. He struggled with the New York Jets as a run-stopping nose tackle last year, but flashed improvement at the end of a lost season. Kinlaw struggled with injuries in college and early in his NFL career, played every game the past two seasons and is just 27, meaning the optimist take is that the Commanders bought low on a potentially ascending player. That's the optimist case, and that's right. That is 100% correct. That's the upside case. My question follow-up would be, okay, did you have to pay that premium? If it turns out you did, this is the kind of thing that I wouldn't have the chutzpah or the stones to be able to do. If I'm in a bidding war for Debo Samuel, right, where a guy has a track record, and last year was his worst year, and he still was more useful than anybody but one player in my offense, non-quarterback division, obviously. If I got to give up a fourth to win the bidding war, I'll do it. If other teams are competing for Laremy Tunsil, I got to give up more than them, I'll do it. If I've got to win a bidding war for Javon Kinlaw, I'm not doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's not the thing. And there's I'm not an executive, and I shouldn't be. I'm not qualified to do anything. I'm not even qualified to do this, for God's sakes. But that is not the way that I could go as an executive, and I think that takes stones.
So this is the thing for me where I get frustrated sometimes. We do this with the draft. We do this sometimes with free agency. And I'm going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because I agree with what you're saying there. I hate the idea when sometimes someone gets like, holy smokes, that's like $4 million more than I would have given him. $4 million. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing. You know, I got a lot of flack because of the Kyle Finnegan non-tendering and they saved a couple million bucks. Like, you couldn't have just paid the guy and not worry about all this stuff. I get all that. Sometimes in free agency, you have to pay a guy. Sometimes in the draft, you're like, whoa, you drafted him at 29? He could have been available at 40. Well, I don't have the 40th pick, so I just took him at 29. Is it a slight overdraft, sir? So when you look at Kinlaw, mm-hmm. maybe it got to the point where could you have got him for 12? Maybe. But did you have to go to 15 to make sure you got him? Okay. I wouldn't have done it for Kinlaw. But sometimes you have to do that in free agency, and that's why you can't make a living off of it. Mm-hmm. Because dudes that are worth 8 go for 12. Dudes that are worth 10 go for 15. And suddenly, you have a bunch of overpriced guys like that. So maybe they found something here. Maybe. I wouldn't bet on it. But maybe there was a premium that had to be paid because it's in free agency, right. And maybe someone else was in a bidding war for him.
So last year, when they signed Dorrance Armstrong, I think his cap number was $5 million in year one. It jumps to 10 this year. When they signed Dante Fowler to punter money, when they signed Cleveland Farrell, a former first-round pick, a high pick, by that John Gruden and I'm blanking on his name, who's now back to NFL.
Oh, Mike Mayock.
Mike Mayock, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
NFL analyst. They drafted him way too high, but they paid nothing. I'm sitting there going, yes to this. Oh, that's brilliant. That's awesome. Now, that's overly simplified elementary going, I'd like to get a great player at a very affordable price. Okay, Chieftain, good luck with that. You know, it's the type of thing you have to turn the Madden settings off to be able to do that in your stupid video game. But you see my point here. If you're going to do a post-hype value on a player and you turn the ultimate profit, they spent next to nothing on the conglomerate of Dorrance Armstrong, $5 million against the cap last year, Dante Fowler, a little over 3. Cleveland Farrell, same type of deal. And you got basically 3 rotational starters out of that. And, 16, 17 sacks for less than the price of a cup of coffee in NFL terms. Yes. So they're doing spin kicks. If you sign Javon Kinlaw on one of those value deals, I'm going, man, is that sharp.
Yes, yeah,
Peters knows him. That makes sense. Hell yeah, you bring in a guy that it hasn't worked yet, but maybe they know why it hasn't worked. Maybe the scheme was all wrong for him in New York, and maybe it was injuries in San Francisco. He was there. He's got it. But you're doing that for like a, I don't know. I don't have a great example. But somebody, because there wasn't a great defensive end in this market that was out in a free agency, but a guy that's had 10 sacks a year for the last 3 seasons, that's the premium you pay. Not quite, but close to that.
So this is, I don't know why everything keeps coming back to the draft for me on this, but this reminds me of what I've said about Ron. Ron's issue with the draft wasn't necessarily that he overdrafted guys, which he did. It was that he overdrafted them and then they sucked, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you think about this with Javon Kinlaw,
yeah.
I overpaid, but if he plays well, I don't care. If I overpay and he sucks, then that's a problem. So if I pay him the $15 million, he comes in, he's a serviceable player. Okay, maybe he was worth 10. I got a good player. But if he comes in and I can't even find a role for him, now I've doubly screwed up. And that was, to me, like going back to the Ron thing, mm-hmm. that's where he would bring a guy in, they weren't good, and then he wouldn't develop them. If you bring in Kinlaw here, and he says, well, he wasn't worth 15, but I turned him into a good big end, he was useful against the run, creating an edge,
yeah.
then you know what? 15 was probably a little bit too much. Maybe I overdrafted, maybe I overpaid a little bit, but I still got a useful player. But if he turns out to be bad,
I think that's the core of it.
This one, you get egg on your face.
Yeah,
this was bad.
Because, again, if Dante Fowler doesn't work out, who cared?
Whatever.
Who cares? $3 million and it's a 1-year deal, he's gone. But this is more of a commitment. I think that's the distinguishing point. So I appreciate the feedback on it, but I just want to clean that up a little bit as to why. Trevor Williams of the Nats joins us at 6. Okay, we'll go through some tourney talk. You have a chance to win Wizards tickets at 6 p.m. as well. Next, I got a simple question. Nats fans, assemble! Who's your favorite national? We'll do that next on The Fan. So Grant and I, and Toby by extension, welcome back, Gene, here on The Fan. Topes is in for Jeeps. You got a few baseball nerds up in here. Ryan hosts, when he's not doing his corporate stuff, right, going to corporate retreats and talking about synergy and branding and, like, you know, the very corporate buzzwords. You know what I heard him say on the phone the other day? He goes, let's put a pin in that discussion and circle back later.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh, right away, Mr. Clary. Yes, of course. But you got some baseball nerds in this program. There's the baseball guy. This is a baseball show. I could say that, right? So we try to do things generally where we're bringing you the baseball information. We try to hit hard, no pun intended, talking about some of the in-depth things. We try to educate. We try to entertain. We're talking about the Nationals. This is not one of those segments. This is just a feeling. Who's your favorite National? I was thinking the reason I'm interested in this is because there are a bunch of guys that are on the way, but we finished the era of Scherzer and Strauss and Soto and Zim. I don't know why it sounds like I'm singing like a Scherzer and Strauss and Soto and Zim. Like I'm singing like a drinking song. But like, you had Bryce for all those years, yeah. And you had the heroes of Corbin and even before that, the Clippard Storin type years. There's so many great dudes have come through, or great players. You don't have institutions yet. You got the idea of a guy that will be. You know exactly what I'm talking about. A couple of these really promising young people who have all the ability in the world and could turn into stars maybe this year. But right now, this minute, taking the pulse, it's not the who you're going to buy a jersey of, because like you and Grant are hipsters. You have to buy like a jersey of a guy.
Oh, I'm not the hipster.
Oh, well he has
Grant
to buy.
Grant is.
Yeah, he's the guy that like if he gets more than three at-bats, Grant doesn't want the jersey anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not the buy the jersey question. But right now, who is your favorite National? And that's what I'm asking you guys. 800-636-1067.
So this one's tough. This one reminds me a little bit of how this past year's draft went for the Commanders, where Jaden Daniels is clearly the guy, right? We understand that.
Yep.
And that would be James Wood in this scenario, clearly the guy. But in the second round, they went with Mikey Samris still, and that one's the one that got me a little steamed up.
Right.
That one's that's a little Dylan Cruz action. That's a little Dylan Cruz.
Dylan Cruz.
Gets me a little fired up. Thinking about Dylan Cruz, the modern word for all this, Danny, is aura.
Mm-hmm.
He's got aura. I mean, down there, we did a little mini mic thing. You can check it out on some of our socials. And you'll notice that in the background, everybody else is outside except for who? Dylan Cruz. Why? Because everybody's chanting, Dylan, Dylan. They want autographs. Everybody, just nonstop Dylan Cruz.
By the way, he handles
it so well.
By the way, that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure people understand this. He's the most popular, like sort of live fan interaction player that they've got.
Yeah, no, not even close.
I'm kind of stunned by that, to be honest with you. Nothing wrong with, I mean, I'm excited about Dylan Cruz like everybody else is. But there's more. I mean, I joked with him. It's like seeing one of the Beatles. And then I had to explain to him the Beatles were a rock band from he was alive. Anyway, but it's like there's this like clamor and throng for him. More so maybe than some of the other guys, than Wood, who's already accomplished more in the show, or Abrams, who was an all-star, or otherwise. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so to answer your question, James is probably my favorite, James Wood, but Dylan Cruz gives me the steamies. He gets me a little bit excited about the season. So probably James Wood, but Cruzy's right there.
Cooper Ryan Clary, who's your favorite National?
My favorite Washington National right now is like, you know, the obvious answer is James Wood or Dylan Cruz. Those are like the biggest names at this point. But I'm going to go with Jake Irvin, man. I get so psyched for a player that just kind of comes out of nowhere. And Jake Irvin really just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I remember when he got the start, everyone's kind of like, oh, cool, like a prospect.
Yeah, I guess we'll get to see that.
No one really heard of him at that point. And he stuck, and he has been really good and has shown signs of being a number two starter on a pretty solid Major League Baseball team. So I think Jake Irvin has a great story behind him. He's recovered from Tommy John surgery in the past, coming out of the University of Oklahoma, which, by the way, the Nationals love University of Oklahoma pitchers.
Do.
Cade Cavalli, Andrew Bennett, and now Jake Irvin also. So Jake Irvin, for me, is the answer. I love him. He's a great guy, and I think he's a great baseball player that will take off here in year three.
Darius.
I'm also going to stay away from the easy answers of James Wood and Dylan Cruz. I'm actually going to go with Luis Garcia right now.
Oh,
yeah.
Because
I think Luis has that kind of charisma that you see that is kind of infectious in a way.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it. I think it's seeing his improvements, especially from what he was, you know, 2 years ago, where he was basically on the bubble of the roster. He wasn't sure if he was going to make it beyond that season. I'm just really happy for the guy. I'm happy that he's finally broke out, found his niche. Looks like he's going to play every day and not have to be a platoon player anymore. And he just looks like one of those guys that has a lot of fun in the locker room, a lot of fun in the dugout. You always see him with like big glasses on or something in the dugout and celebrating with the guys after they come in from doing a home run. I just like that kind of personality and that infectiousness. So Luis Garcia is my guy.
Was looking for my thunder. It sounds like Darius stole it somehow.
Did I just rip that right from you?
Remember, yeah. I was a Luis Garcia guy before.
You were?
It was cool.
You were?
I'm always on that island. These are all good answers. There are plenty of guys that are awesome dudes. Like, Jacob Young looks like the bat boy. Like, there was an emergency. You know how hockey has that emergency goaltender thing? Like, it's a local dude from a beer league. Jacob Young's like, really? Okay, I'll give it a shot. And he tracks balls like a predator in center field and is muscular now and, like, can hit. And hopefully he sticks and is a stud. There's no better guy. More impressive, well-rounded guy than a guy like Josh Bell. I think fans are going to love Paul DeJong this year. You've had C.J. Abrams, who was an all-star, which nobody's mentioned just yet. Let me give you mine. An 800-636-1067. Take a couple calls on this, too. I have many weaknesses when it comes to evaluation. Okay? I have soft spots as well. We all know my weaknesses. Athletic power forwards and big wide receivers. Those are my weaknesses. If you are one of those things, I cannot evaluate you correctly. I said Tyrus Thomas and Thomas Robinson and Derek Williams would all be superstars in the NBA. None of the three were any good at all at any point in time. Okay? I've been on record. I have to take myself out. It's like when they're discussing my school in the committee, I have to leave the room. I have to go full UNC AD.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to leave.
Full Tar Heel.
Yeah, full Tar Heel. I also have a weakness for big wide receivers. Like Mike Williams from USC. The guy ran like a 4.7. I didn't care. He was a big wide receiver. He caught the bottom half of the ball on a one-handed catch one time. It's the greatest catch I've ever seen. And I go, that guy, I don't care about anything else. I want that guy. And again, ate himself out of the league, something that I would probably do. I have to leave the room when we talk about big wide receivers. I also have weaknesses. Weakness number one, in terms of baseball evaluation, I love muscular, free-swinging Latin outfielders.
Ooh.
Right? Like, give me that dude that doesn't care. His chain flies out of his shirt when he takes a daddy hack on an 0-2 pitch. Give me Richard Hidalgo. Like, I love that dude. Like, whoever you're thinking of, you're correct. Like, I wanted them to spend all of the money on that dude who came up with the A's, who had a cannon, who went to the Mets, right? I want all of it. Cespedes. I love that genre of player.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Here's my second weakness. Are you kind of a meanie? Are you a little bit brusque and abrupt and curt and short and don't have time for nonsense? Are you a filthy SOB on the mound? Are you nasty? Are you kind of resentful that the other guy would stand in the box when you're trying to pitch? Are you pissed off at the fact that he's living and breathing the same air as you when his role is to get out? And bleep you? Are you Mackenzie Gore?
Yes.
Then I love you.
Yes.
Mackenzie Gore is my answer. A left-handed pitcher with that kind of power stuff, I can't help it. I'm in love. I'm a Mackenzie Gore guy. And I think he's a good dude for the record. Like, I've always enjoyed our conversations. But, like, he's got that Max Scherzer thing. I'm not saying he's Scherzer, ability-wise. Bear with me.
Mentality.
Nobody's Scherzer. But that same, like... Come on, man. Come on, man. Come on, man. I don't have time. I don't have time for your thing. I don't have time for your nonsense. Like, he never said this. He never said anything to me at all. But when I'm sitting there trying to ask him a good question, and he's looking at me, the vibe I get is, hurry up. Hurry up and ask your stupid question, idiot. Now, he's too polite. He's a nice guy. He doesn't say that. But he doesn't have time for the nonsense.
And I think he's grown because the issue that he used to run into, he has that mentality, and he used to use it on himself. Because he'd throw a bad pitch, and he'd be like, Mackenzie! And then now, I think it's, let's get this guy now. I can't stand that I threw a bad curveball. I'm going to strike him out now.
I love Mackenzie Gore. He's my one seed. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Who's your favorite national? And we got Trevor Williams interview with him that we'll play for you next.